the Toronto Blue Jays sweep.
No way.
Yeah, it took a lot to get there. Happy Friday. It's Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. And all sorts of nonsense going on here and in the dock today. Before we get to that, Alana Rizzo will join us in about 15 minutes here. We'll kick it around Major League Baseball, take a look at that Red Sox-Orioles doubleheader today as part of a four-game series that is very, very relevant in the American League East as the Red Sox try to stay up with the Blue Jays, who just swept the Padres, and the Orioles try to pull their season out of the spiraling toilet that it has made it like three-quarters of the way down the drain of.
Yes.
It's like we have Ben Nicholson-Smith, by the way, already like thirst notebooking for the Orioles' potential sell-off pieces. 100%. Like, buddy, we don't need to learn Ryan O'Hearn this early in the season. And he's a lefty. Get a lefty masher, not anyway.
Yeah, it's looking like, you look at these early season sellers predictions and things like that. The Orioles are pretty much up there, which is crazy to say at this point.
They are fascinating. We'll also talk to Matt Joyce in the second half of the show, one of the best hitting analysts in baseball. And, of course, a longtime Tampa Bay Ray. He's now part of the Rays broadcast. The Toronto Blue Jays are at George Steinbrenner Field. Well, not at it at 11 a.m., but
in a few hours.
Yeah, Eric Lauer might be there already. Chris Bassett gets in for a start around 11 o'clock, so maybe he's there. So pretty loaded show today. Also, a programming note. Today is our last one-hour show. Get ready, right, Julia. As of Monday, we are back to, because the Toronto Maple Leafs bowed out in the second round of the playoffs, and because they're getting the Brendan Shanahan has been dismissed press conference out of the way today, we will go back to 2 hours back for me. You will go to 2 hours for the first time on Monday. So you can look for us 10 to 12 moving forward, not just 11 to 12, which is important because that 10 o'clock slot is obviously the big talk about the game from the night before slot. So you'll want to make sure you catch the first hour. It's a big hour.
How are you feeling? I don't know what to expect exactly. We've been talking about it a little bit. I'm obviously excited because there's so much that we haven't had time to even touch on with the show just being 1 hour. And this
well, we
team.
Got time now.
Exactly. And I will say, Blake kind of scared me a little bit with the way that he spoke about going from 1 hour to two. Oh, it more than doubles the workload.
It
you
does.
Should really be ready. Yeah. So, I'm excited and I'm also a little scared.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be great. It's the biggest thing is that there's more room to talk about everything. We can go outside the Blue Jays a little bit. We can have some more, not out there guests, but we can go a little outside of we have to talk about just the game and things like that. And I didn't tell you all that stuff to scare you. I just told you to get you ready.
No, it's good. I should be prepared and I should make the required life adjustments in order to do this well and not burn out. So yes. I appreciate every tip and advice.
Your comment earlier this week that, you haven't gotten 8 hours sleep every night. I'm like, huh?
Oh,
it's like, what? I don't know. 2013 was the last time I did that. The other weird note from the, who is Kaylee?
What? What do you mean? Who is Kaylee?
There's just a note, happy birthday, Kaylee, in our doc. I don't know who that is.
Kills, I'm so sorry. So, Kaylee Sibley.
Oh, okay.
Social media person for Sportsnet. Today is her birthday, and she is a good friend, and I love her very much. Okay. And so, happy birthday, Kales.
All right. Happy birthday, Kaylee. I didn't know, I didn't know it was her birthday. Didn't clue in who Kaylee was.
Yeah.
I didn't know. If we're doing teammate birthdays, I only did this privately because he doesn't like to make a big deal out of his birthday. But Jamie Campbell's birthday was this week as well.
Really? Yeah, wow. We saw him at the ballpark all week. I didn't know that. Well, if he doesn't like to make a big deal of it.
He likes to keep it a little quieter. All right. That's enough of me doing nonsense. The Toronto Blue Jays swept the San Diego Padres. They got over 500, which is something they had been struggling to do. And honestly, not to overdo one sweep because the Padres came in not playing very good baseball. If you take away their series against the Pirates and the Rockies, they are a below 500 team on the season now. So maybe they fattened up on lesser teams. We'll see. Semi-related to that, the Angels have won 7 in a row. So the Angels series loss does not feel that bad anymore. Now the Angels are back to 500 and swept the Dodgers and whoever they played this week. I'm drawing a blank.
The A's.
There's
The Dodgers sweep was definitely unexpected.
7 in a row.
And now 7. Like you would expect them to, keep a little bit of momentum going against a team like the A's that has significantly cooled off since a good start.
Enough so that they're calling up Denzel Clark tonight. So we're going to, they're going into save the season, call up a prospect ahead of schedule mode.
Sure.
So the Angels note is actually relevant because while it does color the Jays series loss, it also kind of highlights something I said the other week, which is that if I'm going to buy you as like a playoff team, mm-hmm. I'm going to need to see like a 2 or 3 week stretch where you look unbeatable. You look like one of the best teams in baseball. And I'm not saying the Angels are that. I'm saying even a team that we thought was pretty mediocre can win 7 in a row
yeah.
against a very good Dodgers team, against an A's team that have been playing better. So the sweep's awesome. Keep it rolling against a fairly mediocre Tampa Bay team. To get that sweep, the Blue Jays really had to fight. In a position to win it, Jeff Hoffman blows another save. They get behind in the top of the 10th. They come back to tie it. They get behind in the top of the 11th. They come back to walk it off. You could say that they shouldn't have been in that position anyway. Jeff Hoffman could have got the save. They also went 6-for-21 with runners in scoring position and stranded 15 base runners. So maybe you shouldn't have even been in that spot. But Julia, would you feel it's accurate to say a week or two ago they don't pull that game out?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what's interesting about this. When Jeff Hoffman blew that save, I wasn't watching. I ended up watching the whole game afterwards, but I was following along on game day. And as soon as I saw that the game was tied, you can't help but feel, here we go again. What is it about this team and getting over 500? You had a stat yesterday about the Blue Jays record.
2-7 when they had the chance to go above 500.
I guess 3-7 now, which is still not fantastic, but maybe we won't have to worry about this stat anymore.
Until opening day next year, hopefully.
But, you know, Keegan Mathison this week wrote, I thought it was very interesting the way that he put it, but it's a magnetism that this team has with the 500 mark. And it looked like that is what we were going to see yet again. They had so much going for them, and Jeff Hoffman had bounced back earlier on, I believe it was this series, to get the save, and then kind of collapses again. Not a bad pitch that Gavin Sheets hit for a home run, but you can't really expect to walk the leadoff hitter.
Also, get out of Toronto, Gavin Sheets. That's enough.
I know. That was amazing.
5 RBI. He did also boot a ball that led to a bigger inning than it needed to be for the Blue Jays at one point in that game. But the third inning?
Yeah.
But 5 RBI in a game coming up 3 different times in big spots. Go
two,
away.
Two run home runs. Yeah. Yes. It's time for him to really go and, you know, maybe carry this this offense somewhere else for a little bit. But yeah, it was just, and you could see how much this meant to both teams in very different ways, right? Obviously, the Padres trying to break that skid, and the Blue Jays finally attempting to get over the hump and start building off of a winning record. The managers very much managed like this was an important game. Mm-hmm. You could see that too. There were so many decisions that were based on, okay, this is a must win. It was a must win for both teams, which is why it made it so electric, I guess. And good on the Blue Jays. They kept chipping away. And it kind of brings me back to all the quotes that we saw or that we heard earlier on in the homestand about this team is different. We're never really out of it. There is a sense of confidence that is building and that we are never going to just accept defeat. And I think we are experiencing that a little bit more right now. And fans should be confident too that the team is not actually going to just roll over and let a game get out of hand.
As usual, I'm going to pump the brakes on that just a little bit because I would like to see the actual like material. Like they're still 5-8 in one run games.
Yeah.
They're still like, it's not, I don't know. It's good. It's better that they pulled it out than they didn't. Mm-hmm. I feel much, much better about the series and moving forward. But yeah, I'm not going to ascribe them, you know, these ethereal qualities just yet until we see them, you know, do this a couple times in a row.
Blake, there's nothing ethereal about feelings and emotions.
Yeah, that's exactly, it's exactly what good feelings are. The unbearable lightness of a winning streak. Okay, we only have a couple minutes before Alana comes on. So there are a couple things that I want to hit on quickly from this one. Addison Barger, unbelievable game. 3-for-4, a pair of doubles, a double, an RBI, even little stuff. He hustles out a single in the second inning and turns the corner hard just in case it got into the gap. He gets up against Yuki Matsui in the seventh, which is a left-on-left situation that he has been subbed out of normally. And I know they had a short bench, but we've seen them take Barger out, even for Miles Straw in those situations. Unbelievable at-bat for a double. Since May 7th, he has an OPS over 1,000. and is not chasing out of the zone. His defense has been solid at third base. And he wasn't even the highlight young player in the game. This was the Yonatan Class A game. 2 for 3, a pair of doubles, a stolen base, a huge RBI in the 10th. And honestly, in the 8th, there should have been an extra insurance run for Jeff Hoffman because he Class A walked, stole second, and then Miles Straw bailed the bunt to pop it up. They, for whatever reason, had Tyler Heineman bunt again with one out. I know he was trying to get it down for a hit, but the odds of that are pretty slim. And then Beauchamp went back to the pitcher. Completely wasted having Class A on second base. Yep. But what a, you know, he's kind of just been like hanging around the fringes. What a way to introduce yourself.
I have to say, I was a little bit worried about Yonatan Class A earlier in this homestand because we were seeing some weird at-bats, some weird routes to the baseball out in the outfield, and he just didn't look like someone who was very comfortable at this level of play. Well, it turns out you kind of just need to give these guys a little bit of time, and that also applies to Addison Barger. You have to give them a chance to sort of grow into this role. We saw a little bit of that from Yonatan Class A. We definitely saw that from Addison Barger. He has turned himself into a major leaguer, really understanding what the situation calls for. At times, you know, earlier on, I would think, man, Barger could really benefit from just taking a little bit out of his swing at times. Just, you know.
Nah.
But here's the thing. He's learned to do that. He doesn't have to do that all the time. But he has learned to do that, and that with the Matsui at bat, that's what was happening right there. You don't have to pull the ball every time. You can still hit it hard, hit it to the other side, and, you know, just allow for your team to sort of come through for you as well.
Yeah, so great stuff from Barger and Class A. Obviously, Nathan Lucas continues to have big moments for this team. He has the walk-off RBI after Dalton Varsho sneaks a triple down the line to set that one up. And pretty important to have the down the lineup contributions on a day where Springer sat until the late pinch hit, Kirk sat until the late pinch hit, Anthony Santander wasn't available, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. went 0 for 5 with some truly bad plate appearances, and Bo Bichette was 2 for 6. And the RBI single he hit in the fourth, Kolek, I don't understand when a team comes up and Bo Bichette of all people, but especially the Blue Jays, here's an 0-0 middle of the zone breaking ball. Like, that is, you are playing to what the Blue Jays are looking for and what their strengths have been so far. Just here's a freebie. Second day in a row, Bo Bichette had a base running mistake too, which warrants watching given that that came up earlier in the year as well. But this was a positive day, so let's not dwell on it too much. On the Hoffman front.
Yes.
This is a couple times now. And
I thought you said this was a positive day.
Well, you do have to address the closer continuing to blow saves.
Yeah, absolutely.
But here's the positive spin. Are you confident enough in how Jimmy Garcia and Brandon Little have looked that if you need to for the next little bit, you can kind of go by committee, by pocket of the lineup until Hoffman gets a couple steady ones under his belt?
I think that's something to look at least for sure. It has been very up and down. It's unbelievable that we're talking about this after the way that the season started for Jeff Hoffman. The decline has been really steep, and I don't actually know what to make of it as of now. I think we do need a little bit of a bigger sample size in order to understand what's happening. One thing that Buck Martinez pointed out during the broadcast yesterday, and it's like, yeah, that's a pretty good place to start, is you cannot walk the leadoff guy. That has happened a few times for Hoffman, and that guy usually comes around to score. So something to look at. He is at his best when he is really pounding the zone, and he has the stuff to do it. His fastball plays really well. He can challenge hitters a little more. A couple of weird splitters that seem to get away from him yesterday. He didn't have as much command. The ball four fastball to Merrill was also one that just didn't land
close,
anywhere near the... So, you know, there's clear aspects to look at and to improve on, but the underlying stuff, I don't know how to put my finger on it quite yet, Blake.
Well, we will continue to look at that one. The other aspect of this one is that they use 7 of their 8 relievers, so could be a tough one today when Eric Lauer is your starter and he's generally been a one-time through the order guy. We'll set that one up for you in the second half of the show. Take a look at Eric Lauer against Drew Rasmussen, but right now we're going to look around Major League Baseball with Alana Rizzo of Fair Territory, of Nesson, of Blue Jays Central. She joins us now. Alana, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. Good morning. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And we're great. Yeah, the Jays just swept the Padres. It's
yeah, we're doing well.
It's the hot, probably the most optimistic the tone around the team has been so far. You're on Blue Jays Central regularly, and I believe on Sunday. What have your impressions of the team been from afar so far?
You know, I feel like this is something we've said for a couple of years, guys, that I'm still waiting for the Blue Jays to significantly gain some traction and kind of pull away from some of the other, you know, bottom teams in the AL East. You know, we were talking so much about, are they going to re-sign Vladdy? Are they going to extend Vladdy? They did that, right? So it's like, okay, the window continues to close for these guys in terms of when Bo and Vladdy will be playing together. So they signed Vladdy. We're trying to figure those things out. And then it's like, okay, now this is a team that has a very good pitching rotation. This is a team that I think has enough firepower in their lineup with the addition of Anthony Santander. And I'm still kind of waiting for this team to figure out who they are. I mean, sweeping the Padres is a good sign, right? But that can't be enough for what this team needs to do for the remainder of the season. I was on Fair Territory yesterday with Ken Rosenthal, and there was a Padres fan that was wondering if the Padres were going to start selling everybody now that they were swept by the Blue Jays. And I was like, no, I think Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado are safe there in San Diego. But I think that the Toronto Blue Jays are actually more talented than what their record shows. I keep waiting and yearning, as I'm sure you guys too do too there in Toronto, waiting for them to kind of go on a tear and show what they can do, because nobody in the American League East is pulling away with anything. So this division, Suns, the Orioles, is really anyone's to win. And I'm just kind of still waiting for the Blue Jays to do that. Get some legitimate traction moving forward, because I don't know how long the two big guns are going to be able to play together.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Elena. And it's something that, you know, was asked of John Schneider, even in this homestand, has this team found its identity yet? Because there's been a lot to go on sort of in this first quarter of the season. But you mentioned the Baltimore Orioles. I don't think anyone expected us to be here. I'm still surprised, to be honest with you. I haven't completely digested just how bad things are in Baltimore right now. What do you make of things? We all knew that the pitching was going to be a problem. Kyle Gibson gets released. It seems like this is absolutely the worst case scenario.
You know, it's funny that you say that too, because I really thought that the Orioles were going to be something special this year because of the new ownership group and the like this injection of excitement in Baltimore. And they have such a good young core of guys, but you know, they have not been performing well offensively, and they have a decimated starting rotation. The problem is no one's going to feel sorry for you. Just look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. They don't have a healthy arm. They can't buy, literally or figuratively, buy a healthy arm right now. So nobody's going to feel badly for you. The thing that bothers me is that this was a team that won 100 games recently. And now I don't think, honest to goodness, even with all of the wild card opportunities, I don't think this team is going to make the postseason. And you have a new owner that is excited, seemingly wants to win. They didn't do a ton in the offseason. They're going through this massive skid. And then Mike Elias, their president of baseball ops, decides that he's going to allow this young core of guys and a new interim manager talk to the media and kind of say, step away and say, I need to collect my thoughts. That's your job to address those issues when you are in that position of power. You know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And I don't like what this looks like. I mean, optically, it looks terribly, right? I mean, they fire Brandon Hyde, who was just an American League Manager of the Year. It's not his fault that his team is decimated. I mean, there's been some questionable managerial choices. But this is a team that's just underproducing all the way around. Remember the fanfare coming up about Grayson Rodriguez and all of those things. And obviously, you know, the team is not performing. Their pitching staff is terrible. Their offense is, you know, anemic. This is just a team that is scuffling right now, and they're drowning. And honestly, I would be very surprised if they even, now granted, it's May 23rd, but they are digging themselves quite a hole. And I would be very surprised if they make the playoffs.
Well, that's the thing, is they've dug this hole. Even if you think they're way better than 16-32, they're 10 and a half games back of a wild card spot already. And I think there are a couple you just mentioned. The Jays are a team that you think is better than their record. I don't imagine the Yankees are going to slow down. The AL Central has a couple good teams. You're going to have to jump already a bunch of teams in addition to making up the 10 games. So they'll start to try to do that this weekend in a four set against Boston. We got a doubleheader today. The Red Sox are kind of right around the Blue Jays. They've done the same thing, hover around 500 a little bit. You know, the big thing there, I think, has been the lack of rotation support behind Garrett Crochet. Today, they'll try to get length out of Brian Bello and Lucas Giolito. What have you made of the Red Sox kind of being in the same spot as the Jays in the AL East?
Well, that's exactly the thing. You guys were talking about finding the identity. You know, with John Schneider saying we don't really know who the Jays are right now, I don't think the Red Sox have a clue who they are. I think this is a team that obviously is, I believe they're at 20, they're at, sitting now at 26 and 25. I mean, they're not a team that is having a winning record. They're barely at 500, and they've constantly hovered over that 500 mark all season long. I really love the Crochet signing, and you kind of think like, okay, every time that guy goes out every fifth day, that's going to be a win. But then you have a questionable decision about pulling him after 85 pitches or whatever it was. And I understand the whole workload management and this, that, and the other thing, and we don't want to burn guys out, but you've got to be able to steal those types of wins, especially when the rest of your rotation is kind of falling short. The Red Sox bullpen is going to be so taxed by the time the season is said and done. Obviously, Tanner Houck is on the IL. That's a huge loss. Brian Bello is still a young guy. You got Lucas Giolito going today, as you mentioned, in this doubleheader. This is a team that needs some pitching, right? And I mean, I think you can say that about every single team in the big leagues for the most part. But also the offense is still the whole situation with Rafael Devers. I mean, I don't think that they've handled this situation very well. You know, in the offseason, nobody was telling Rafael Devers that Alex Bregman was coming, right? And then Alex Bregman gets there and they want Rafael Devers to DH. And then Tristan Casas goes down. It's like, oh, by the way, can you play first? It's like he's supposed to be this franchise player. And then you have Christian Campbell, a very young guy who obviously they see a lot of value in. They gave him a nice extension. Now, Pedro Martinez said this the other day, guys. I was working with him on TBS, MLB on TBS on Tuesday night. He said, Christian Campbell is so good, they're going to try to make him bad. And what he meant by that was that they're already taking this guy and putting him all over the place. He was in the outfield. He's looking at his defensive lineup card like, as if I was out in the outfield, like, what am I supposed to be doing here? You know, and he's taking ground balls at first base. It's like, so then his offense is going to scuffle because he's probably so worried about making a good first baseman. You know, so it's a difficult situation. Trevor Story, who I love, I've known Trevor since he was drafted and came up with the Colorado Rockies. He is really scuffling. I mean, he had a little period of time there with the Red Sox where he was hitting the ball, you know, and hitting the cover off the ball. Now he's really scuffling. So is it time to bring up Roman Anthony? Is it time to bring up Marcelo Meyer? It's a team that, again, is kind of just hovering around 500. But then again, the Yankees aren't pulling away either. So you've got to kind of figure it out. But, you know, now's the time to kind of make that move. And some would argue that a series against the Orioles is a time to do that.
This is not really relevant to the point you were making there, but does it ever stop being cool to be able to say, so I was talking to Pedro Martinez the other day.
Did I just name drop? Oh my, I'm sorry.
It's great. Name drop away.
I'm 1,000 years old and I've been in this industry for a long time. And it's funny, we were on a TBS and all four of us on the desk were former Dodger employees. It was like Jimmy Rollins, Corey Granderson, me and Pedro. I mean, there for a little amount of time, but yeah, sorry about that.
No,
when I was talking to Hall of Famer Pedro Martinez,
I would do the same thing. You mentioned Curtis Granderson, and I was ready to be like, I went to a wrestling event with him in 2017. No big deal.
You guys are BFFs. Yeah, it's fine.
He would have no recollection of this, but I do. You mentioned the Dodgers there. You guys had Mark Pryor on Fair Territory, the Dodgers version of Fair Territory, the other day, and you asked him about the ramp up plan for Shohei Ohtani as a pitcher, and he kind of said, hey, not unreasonable to think he might face some live hitters next month. Where is kind of your Shohei watch on the pitcher side? And what did you come away from the Mark Pryor conversation expecting for Shohei rest of the way?
Yeah, Mark Pryor is a plethora of information, obviously, and he's such a good get when you can talk to him about pitching. Shohei Ohtani, obviously, is such a unique case in a variety of ways, right? Because not only is he an unbelievable hitter, but he can, you know, he's coming back to try to pitch, and that's what he wants to do. The thing I worry about is because the Dodgers are so hurt in terms of pitching, you know, Blake Snell's on the IL, Tyler Glasnow's on the IL, Roky Sasaki's on the IL, Clayton Kershaw's just coming back from a surgery, and, you know, he's on the kind of the back nine of his Hall of Fame career. I don't want them to rush Shohei back just because of necessity, right? I think that would be really, really, really stupid to do, and I don't think the Dodgers will, but there's more of an impetus to try to get him there because they're scuffling, right? They need starting arms that can go deep into a ball game because their bullpen's going to be worn out as well. Now, Mark did say that it's a potential that he does start to face hitters in June. He's starting to, you know, ramp up a little bit in terms of that. Obviously playing catch, throwing on flat ground, kind of getting off the mound, those type of things. But hitters are a possibility in June. Now, the unique thing about Shohei, right, is you can't send him out on a rehab assignment. Right. He's your leadoff hitter and your DH. So it's like, I mean, sometimes Mookie leads off, sometimes Shohei leads off. But the point is, he's your DH, right? You're not going to take that bat out of the lineup to send him to AAA to face hitters there and get, you know, some reps in terms of that. So it's such a unique rehab process and such a unique situation with Shohei that I kind of feel like that even delays the return even more just because he's a two-way player. So obviously, anytime you can inject Shohei back into your rotation, but again, that would probably be every 6 days, right? And then you're dealing with Yamamoto every 6 days. And, you know, when Roki comes back, it's a weird dynamic of situation for the Dodgers. Should it be six man? Should you force them to go on a less day of rest type of situation? So they're not decisions I would like to make as a fan. I'm like, love to see him. But also as a fan of the game, I don't want to see him if he's not ready.
Alana, it's such a good point that you make about the rehab assignment. I must admit, I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, and I want to, before we let you go, I want to sneak one more in about pitching and about potential overreactions or rush decisions. And that is, of course, I'm talking about Paul Skeens. A lot of talk, right?
I kind of knew you were going there. Yeah, it's funny because that's such a topic of conversation right now. In our industry, it's like, are the Pittsburgh Pirates going to trade Paul Skeens? Well, not if they don't want Pittsburgh to burn to the ground. There's a lot of reasons why you should not trade Paul Skeens right now. And I feel badly that Jared Jones is on his way to the knife. He's having surgery. But Paul Skeens obviously still has 4.5 years of control by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And you know, they are in a messy situation right now, obviously firing Derek Shelton. It is not Derek Shelton's fault that the Pirates are playing poorly. You got to look at ownership there, right? I mean, if they've given you a $12 roster, that's tough. And Paul Skeens, yes, he's the most dynamic young pitcher in the game. But then you're going to have to get a massive haul back for him, right? I mean, think about what it would take to get Paul Skeens. You're going to have to give up pretty like all five top prospects and maybe some really big veterans in your lineup or whatever. My point is, it's going to take a bag to get Paul Skeens. And I just don't think now is the time. I had this conversation name dropping with Ken Rosenthal yesterday. We talked about this, right? Cause it's the nouveau topic right now. And you know, right now with the 4.5 years of control, maybe they wait a couple of years, and get what they can out of him. And then trade him. The problem is that Paul Skeens is even a trade piece. The Pirates should be building around him. We should not be talking about trading him. They should complement him with some serious talent to make a run. Remember when the Tigers got Tarek Skubal at first? Imagine if they would have traded Tarek Skubal when he had a ton of value and they were sucking. Look at where the Tigers are right now. And it's largely because of Tarek Skubal. So surround Paul Skeens with some legitimate talent and show your fan base that you're trying to make a run in a very winnable NL Central.
4.5 years is a long time. And Pirates owner Bob Nutting, yeah, he can fire the manager. He needs to take a page out of your boy Morgan Wallen's book and say, I'm the problem. And focus in on that, the organizational rot there. Alana, thanks so much for taking the time out on a doubleheader day. Really appreciate it.
Honest to goodness, anytime we can even mention Morgan Wallen, I'm in. You guys have a great day. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
Thanks, Thank Alana. You. Alana Rizzo, Fair Territory, Nesson, Blue Jays Central, TBS.
That was awesome.
A lot of jobs, a lot of great content. And yeah, really great chat with Mark Pryor if you want to hear a little bit more about Shohei Ohtani's rehab and just pitching in general. It was a great chat. Mark Pryor is one of the coolest guys to listen to when he does the podcast rounds or the media rounds. Also a cool guy to listen to, Matt Joyce. He'll be on the Rays pre and post game on FanDuel Sports Network for this series. Let's take a break. Let's talk to him about this Rays team. Set this series up. It starts tonight at 7:05. Drew Rasmussen against Eric Lauer. It's a Saturday night game, 7:05. Jose Berríos against Shane Baz. And then wrap it up Sunday, 1:40. Chris Bassett against Ryan Pepiot. We'll take a break. We'll talk to Matt Joyce and tee up the Rays side of this thing. We get our first look at Steinbrenner Field.
Up close
and personal. I watched a game the other day. They were playing. I can't remember who they were playing now. The Orioles, maybe. Anyway, all the managers were arguing at the umpires.
Maybe the Astros.
It was the Red Sox because it was the game where the umpire escalated and with Walker Buehler and it got out of control. I think that was the one. Anyway, the center field scoreboard was not working.
So
it looked like extra minor league.
I was going to ask if it even felt like you were watching a major league game.
It did not. Maybe the scoreboard will be working today. Anyway, let's take a break. Let's see if Matt Joyce knows how to fix the scoreboard. On the other side is JStock Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreitz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Jays and Rays, 4-3 set. I almost said down at the Trop, but it's not at the Trop. It's at Steinbrenner Field. The Jays historically have been very bad at the Trop. We'll see if that holds in Steinbrenner Field. Let's see what Matt Joyce thinks about it. Former MLB All-Star Rays analyst on the FanDuel Sports Network. He joins us now. Matt, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning. How are we doing, guys?
We're doing good, man. It's, I guess let's start with the field. How have you found the change from the Trop to Steinbrenner Field so far here?
Yeah, big difference. Obviously, playing at the Trop, I mean, you got the turf, it's outlaid on concrete. You got the, obviously, air conditioned. and then you look at Steinbrenner. I mean, it's outdoors. It's been beautiful so far, starting to heat up. Seems like the ball is carrying really well to right field, right center. We saw that actually play a big role in the last series against the Astros. And then, obviously, as it heats up, the ball's going to carry better. So, exciting to see what happens in the series against the Blue Jays.
Matt, it was a little bit of a slow start for the Rays at Steinbrenner. It feels like it took a little bit to actually feel like home. Where are they now in terms of just being adjusted and having that be, you know, their ballpark?
I mean, I think they're actually really comfortable. Nice. You talk to a handful of the guys and they'll tell you that it's like a resort or a country club in there. Yankees obviously put, I think, $40-ish million the year before of renovating Steinbrenner Field. So it's really nice in there. Equipment room, weight room's great, locker room, food room, everything. You have everything that you need and want as a player. So it's easy to get comfortable in there. And obviously, the start of the season, the weather's been great. So, I think they haven't played as well as they've hoped or expected. The offense has struggled a little bit. A couple guys that they've dealt with injuries, which every team deals with. Big-name guys like Shane McClanahan, you know, hasn't really returned. And honestly, haven't really heard too much of an update. That's been a frustrating one for everybody. I think they're playing okay on their standards. They're still in it, but not where they want to be.
You mentioned the ball carrying a little bit in certain parts of the ballpark. I know Yandy and Junior Caminero have both had a lot of success with the long ball at Steinbrenner Field. Both of those guys are righties, but is there a type of hitter or style of hitter that you could see, you know, playing particularly well with that ballpark environment?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the ball's carrying well to right. I mean, somebody that is a big righty that drives the ball in the air to right field, somebody like Aaron Judge, obviously, you know, you look at what he's done at Yankee Stadium. The stadium at Steinbrenner was made to kind of replicate Yankee Stadium in New York. So the only fact is you have to take consideration of, like, hey, is the wind blowing out? Obviously, when it heats up, the ball's going to carry a little bit better. But other than that, a lefty that's a pull hitter, you know, I would have liked to play there myself, pulled a lot of balls in my day. So, it just depends. A lefty pull hitter and a righty oppo guy. I mean, you look at somebody like Bo Bichette, Vladimir coming in, Guerrero. I mean, those two guys have a good chance of popping one this series, at least one.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I mean, Vladdy, his Yankee Stadium numbers are very, very good. And so you kind of look at that and wonder what he can do at a place like Steinbrenner. And the Blue Jays are going to need it because it's been a long time since they've been able to top the Rays throughout this season. They haven't won this season series since 2017, Matt, which is really unbelievable to say. You know, wondering if you saw something here at Rogers Center when they played. What is it about this matchup that just seems to favor the Rays so much?
You know, honestly, I really don't know if I have a good answer for you. You know, I feel like the Blue Jays and the Rays had good teams. They were pretty fairly matched over the years. I felt like the one thing the Rays probably had a little bit better was the pitching. Yeah. You know, they just prioritized the starting staff, big-time arms. Obviously, they've done an incredible job of using the resources that they've been giving and allocated in order to trade away some big-name guys and get some top prospects and then develop them, and then they come into their own and become really good players for the Rays. And that's been their motto. It's been their plan. That's worked out extremely well. So, you know, playing teams like the Blue Jays, I don't know. They just had their number.
In terms of pitching advantages, no disrespect to Eric Lauer, who's going to get the start for the Blue Jays tonight. He's been a one-time through the order guy so far. They used 7 of their 8 relievers in an 11-inning game yesterday. And then on Tampa side, Drew Rasmussen, I know he hasn't pitched a lot the last couple years coming back from that internal brace procedure, but microscopic ERA so far here. He's sub-3 for his career. Matt, what have you seen from Rasmussen this year in that move back to full-time starter role?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big jump. He's dealt with some injuries over the last few years. Obviously, the TJ and then, repeated injuries to that elbow. Obviously, it's tough to see, but he's bounced back really well. Came out of the bullpen last year, looked really sharp. Stuff was electric. And then, obviously, you know, they've been trying to build him up to a full 100 pitches since the start of the season. But Ras is great, man. His stuff is like I said, it's electric. The fastball takes off top of the zone, throws that sharp slider, really attacks hitters. I mean, he's a great, a fantastic pitcher for the Rays. It's just a matter of sometimes guys will run into something. I mean, you throw the high fastballs, it's much easier to get the ball in the air as a hitter. On the other side, I mean, Rays have struggled against lefties. I mean, they've only hit 205 against lefties. They've not played that well against them. So that's going to be an issue here in game one. We'll see how it goes.
With respect to Rasmussen, you mentioned the fastball up in the zone. He's also a guy mixes the cutter, the sinker, and the four-seamer. When you're a hitter, what does that do to you when a guy has 3 different fastball types he can give you?
Oh, I mean, it plays mind games with you. That's for sure. You got to kind of pick one. What's for me as a hitter, I'm looking at what the highest percentage that he throws. And I'm typically looking for that one pitch. How is he going to attack me? I mean, I've seen him a handful of times throw that. He'll throw a cutter in and then the lefty hitters will eliminate it. Be like, okay, I got to take this pitch. And then he'll throw the front door two seam. And you just, you're standing there like a statue. So, you're like, tip your cap to that one. It's gross. But again, this is where a lot of preparation comes into play of like, all right, how is he going to attack me? How is he attacking similar hitters to me? What does he do with runners in scoring position? And what's my approach? What am I looking for? And so again, when you're saying, hey, is it going to ride? Is it going to two seam? Is it going to cut? It makes it extremely challenging to hit as a hitter.
Another guy that had been challenging to hit in the past, Shane Boz, we're going to see him tomorrow. Kind of a weird stretch for him right now, Matt. The Blue Jays did a good job against him here at Rogers Center. What do you make of Shane Boz's season up to this point?
Yeah, another guy that has electric stuff. For me, I just think he has to stay with his best stuff. He's been getting a little beat with his third or fourth best pitches. Fastball again, another guy that throws that fastball 98 miles an hour at the top of the zone, a lot of good life. And then his curveball has been absolutely dominant. Those two pitches alone, I think if he prioritizes and sticks with those pitches when he's especially in like a jam, a key spot, he's going to be just fine. Again, just getting beat on his third or fourth best pitches, cutter, slider, changeup, to where he's got better weapons to attack the hitters. So I'm sure he'll make those adjustments, you know, moving forward in the season. I think the Rays are very like high on him, in order of like big expectations. I mean, he's got fantastic stuff. Just sometimes a game of adjustments.
On the hitter side, you mentioned they haven't hit particularly well against lefties so far this year. Maybe Josh Lowe doesn't necessarily help that as a lefty, but in the time since he's returned, and we saw it in the Tampa series here, he had a couple, him and Brandon Lau both had a couple moments at the top of the order there. What has getting Josh Lowe back done for the top of that Rays order and just kind of lengthening that? You get to move Chandler Simpson down to the bottom third there. Getting Josh Lowe back, the importance of that for the Rays.
Yeah, J-Lo is a big part of this offense. I mean, he could do a lot of different things to in order to hurt you. He puts out quality ABs consistently. He's going to draw his walks, squares up the ball constantly. He'll pop, you know, a couple homers here and there, and then he can steal some bases. So an all-around, well-rounded player that has a lot of ways different to beat you. You know, as far as the top of the order, I like Chandler Simpson at the top of the order. I mean, he just is a guy that has an immediate impact when he's come up. Again, we're a guy that he can walk, he can lay down a bunt, he can get a hit, and then he can either score from first, he can steal second and third. You know, like those things for me stand out where like you, somebody like him has the ability to change the game from the jump, from the get-go. Yandy's obviously the on-base percentage. He's been leading off the last series against the Astros. His on-base over the last like year and a half has been close to 400. So they like him at the top of the order, which is understandable because he's going to consistently get on base and he hits the ball hard. But yeah, I mean, again, they have some weapons to get some guys that obviously like J-Lo that have gotten healthy. He's going to help. They've definitely struggled to score some runs, you know, as many as they've wanted or needed. So hopefully he can add a little bit more offensive firepower to that lineup.
You mentioned liking Chandler Simpson, Matt, at the top of the order. He was at the top for the first few games here, and then he got moved down with the return of Josh Lowe for that final game. And when it comes to on-base percentage, what do you see from him in terms of, you know, seeing the ball and taking his walks, contact ability? I think that maybe that is the one question that from the outside we may have about Chandler Simpson, because we see obviously the potential on the base paths, but what is that aspect like for his game?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we've all heard a lot about his speed and we've seen it. I have to check the stats, but last time I checked, I think he's 12 stolen bases in the last 28 games, something like that, crazy off the charts speed, right? Again, that ability to impact the game. But if you're not on base, you don't get on base, then, hey, you know, you can't score runs. So I actually think it's been incredibly, if not even just as impressive, his ability to take the bat-to-ball, his bat-to-ball skills, his ability to square up the baseball, and obviously does a great job of staying the other way, doesn't try to do too much, knows the type of player he is. His ABs, like, he doesn't chase a lot. So, you know, these are things that are only going to get better. His ABs, his quality ABs, once he starts to see and face more of these big league pitchers, make the necessary adjustments. Obviously, as you mature as a hitter, typically your strike zone, your plate discipline get a little bit better. So those things are really going to benefit him and the Rays moving forward. But no doubt the speed is the game changer for him.
Matt, this is not necessarily related to Rays and Jays, but it is related to hitting. And I remember seeing you tweet early in the season about the Pelotero app, which is an app designed to help hitters with their game in game. And I know that you were a pretty early adopter of using, you know, video and things like that to work on your swing. Where do you see that ad in baseball right now in 2025? Like, if you were a hitter now, how are you optimizing your approach and kind of making those in-game and between-game adjustments?
Yeah, I think it depends on who you are, right? You know, for somebody like me, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. You know, it's hard to change your swing when you're mid-30s, later in your career. But I think the younger guys, you know, when you're 12, 15 years old, there's a lot of room for adjustments and growth and you know, development ultimately. And that's really where Pelotero comes in. It's video analysis. And then it compares you to, hey, the best hitters in the world, and gives you a hitter score, a true potential hitter score. And again, like, you know, as a hitter, our bodies, the better your body moves, the better that you're going to be able to swing the bat more efficiently. And then ultimately, if you're able to do that, your bat speed increases, and hopefully, hey, you're able to square up more balls, and obviously you get the results in the long run. But nowadays, it's crazy. It's very different than when I came up. I mean, they have all kinds of technology that is helping players, sometimes overwhelming players. So I think there's a fine line there of, hey, let me see what's out there. But at the same time, what works for me? What do I like? And taking, maybe trying some things more so in spring training, and then saying, all right, what do I like? And then what am I going to run with, you know, for the rest of the season? But I mean, they have force plates, they have, I don't even know, Yakker Tech, you know, just all kinds of stuff, exit velocity. Like, you have so much information that sometimes it's just like, man, let me just keep it simple. See the ball, hit the ball.
Yeah. Okay. Before we let you go, Matt, if you happen to see Max Scherzer at the park this weekend, you remind him or what?
No. Honestly, I haven't had a chance to talk to him too much. But man, what a competitor, what a legend of the game. I don't know what it is. Sometimes, you know, just like the Rays, the Blue Jays, sometimes you just, you know, feel more comfortable and you have success against certain guys. I was a really good fastball hitter, and he liked to throw the fastball and challenge guys, and I welcomed it. So, yeah, it was, that's nice to have on the back of the baseball card, to tell the grandkids and kids about. So,
yeah, you don't need to remind him. He knows.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet he does. Matt, thanks so much for doing this, man. Enjoy the series.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Matt Joyce, former MLB All-Star, 15-year vet. And yeah, what I'm joking about there is he is one of the few players to have homered off of Max Scherzer three times. He even hit a grand slam off of Max Scherzer during Nat Garza's no-hitter. Damn. Which is, I'd be worried if I'm a teammate and someone is throwing a no-hitter. Like, we got to end this inning quick. We don't want him to sit for too long. You hit a grand slam, you clear the bases, you get things done. That's you add four to the board and you clear things up. You get Matt Garza back on the mound. Pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's momentum right there.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't think so.
This is going to be a thing for as long as we work together, I see.
Yeah, but I just mean like in like pure physics terms, whether or not we believe in like team momentum and things like that. I mean, like the physics of we stopped this thing. I don't know that it kicks the momentum. You know, I'm picturing the perpetual motion machine if you stop one of them. Anyway, we got Rays. Blue Jays series tonight. So one thing we didn't really get to touch on earlier, and we'll just do it quickly here because we only got 3 minutes left, but Eric Lauer is going to start. And the Blue Jays used, I mentioned it to Matt there, the Blue Jays used 7 of their 8 relievers yesterday. The only one they did not is Jose Urena. Braden Fisher only threw 3 pitches. And then Jimmy Garcia, Chad Green, Mason Fluardi probably available given the load. But it's a bit of a weird one where Hoffman and Little are almost certainly down. Yariel threw 24 pitches yesterday, and he pitched Tuesday. Is he a yellow? I guess they have to give Eric Lauer more leash than certainly more than one time through the order if he's pitching well, right?
Yeah, this is going to have to. There will need to be some sort of adjustment to the desired game plan because yes, Eric Lauer has been just a one time through the order type of guy. He says that he feels totally comfortable with that. But now the Blue Jays actually need a little bit more considering just how much. And it's funny because the bullpen was fine for the entire series, but one extra innings game can really change the outlook of that.
One extra innings game where, because the bullpen had been used so little Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you were comfortable pulling Bowden Francis after 4 innings, not challenging him to go a third time through. He wasn't as bad as a 4-inning line would suggest.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought, you know, the slider was biting a little bit more. It wasn't as bad a Bowden Francis outing as the couple we'd seen where he wasn't able to give them length earlier.
Yeah.
But they looked at it and said, we want a sweep. We've got a really fresh bullpen. Let's use it. And now that bleeds into today because it ended up going 11. So it's tough there. We'll see what Eric Lauer can give them. As Matt mentioned, this is a Rays team that is not particularly good against left-handed pitching, despite having a couple righty bangers in there like Yandy Diaz and Junior Caminero.
Feels like a good day, though, to, you know, give Lauer a little bit more of
Hopefully that extends. The only other thing of note, we don't have an update on Anthony Santander. I thought maybe I could look at yesterday's Bison's box score and get a hint as to who wasn't in the lineup and was maybe a taxi squad guy. They got rained out. So we can't even sneak a peek at that. We'll see if Anthony Santander hits the IL or if someone's with them just in case, or if he's going to continue to play through hip and shoulder wonkiness, for lack of a better term, because there's no official designation. Drew Rasmussen, Eric Lauer should be fun tonight. Rasmussen, one of my favorite pitchers in baseball and arguably the best right-handed cutter in all of baseball. Nate Eovaldi might disagree, but it's right up there. And then as we talked about with Matt, the three fastball interplay, cutter, sinker, four seam. It'd be interesting. Vlad is 6-for-21 against a career with three extra base hits, and Springer's taken him yard before. So not impossible that they'll keep the good stuff rolling. And who knows, maybe getting out of the trap changes the Tampa luck. It can't be as bad, right?
No, it can't be as bad. That's for sure.
It can't be. Thanks to Alana Rizzo and Matt Joyce for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Jake Scholes, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Blair and Barker have you 2-4 and post game. And a reminder that as of Monday, we are 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., not 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. So you get a double dose of us. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend.